Hello, some nerds, and welcome to another episode of D&D and TV, the weekly podcast where we rewatch or recap television shows we really enjoy and talk about how the themes, concept, and characters could be used in different role-playing games. I am your host, Jeremy Talaman, and joining me today is my co-host, Denny Calamari, who is completely unaware of who George Takei is. And this is unacceptable.
I really just don't know who George Takei is. Whatever is, what's his last name? Takei?
Takei. Oh my god. Oh, this hurts.
I'm so sorry.
In my soul. Do you know who Patrick Stewart is?
Yes, I know who Patrick Stewart is.
Do you know who William Shatner is?
Yes, I know William Shatner.
Okay, Leonard Nimoy?
Yes.
Okay. So, George Takei was on the same show as Leonard Nimoy and William Shatner.
Okay.
And he's been in a lot of other stuff since. He's a very good actor, and he plays someone in this episode that we're talking about here, because we're talking about Avatar The Last Airbender, the animated series from 2005, episode 5 of season 1, or book 1, Water. We're talking about episode 6, which is Imprisoned, which is,
yes.
Aang and the others find an Earth Kingdom mining town under the thumb of the Fire Nation, and Katara feels guilty when her actions lead to an arrest.
Sulu!
Yes!
Oh!
Oh my.
I'm so sorry.
Wow. Okay, but you got there in the end.
We did.
The important thing. Yeah. It's okay. Oh, geez. We have fun here, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
let's talk about Avatar and get to George Takei's role in it later. This is an episode that kind of felt like a random encounter to me that just kind of kept going.
Yeah.
Because, what is it? It starts out with them just like in the forest going, let's eat nuts. Except these ones might actually just be rocks. And they see someone earthbending and chase him to a village. And they're like, let's stay at the village. And then the kid gets arrested and they have to rescue him. And it feels like it just kind of snowballed.
Yeah, I think, in my opinion, this is like a little village that the DM was like, all right, maybe they'll purchase some things. They might rest up, and then that's it. But just like for some spice for the world building, oh, you can't earthbend here. That's just like the thing. That's all. Mm. And they're like, let's stir up as much trouble as we possibly can here.
It's so much PC energy. They have so much PC energy in this. Like the fact that they see Haru, the earthbender kid, he's practicing earthbending, and they're like, okay. Sokka's like, okay, we need to be cautious and see, like, approach him carefully. And Katara's like, hi, are you an earthbender? I'm a waterbender. It's like not even failed, like a stealth check or anything. It just walks directly out in front of him and goes, hi, let's be friends.
I do. That feels so, like, so on brand for a D&D character, though.
Yeah.
I've got a...
It's so great.
I've got a game that I run, and there's these magic crystals, and they're outlawed where the people are, and they start to figure this... The players always start to figure this out, but there's always a party member who just outwardly, like, straight up just asks people where it is. Like, knowing it's outlawed, knowing it can get them in trouble, like, yeah, look, we want these crystals, where can we get them? And it's that same type of thing where it's just like, oh, I don't care. I'm shouting out this thing that I'm not supposed to say.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it's an uncommon thing. I remember hearing many years ago, this is like in a Dragon magazine. It was actually, I think it was from somebody in like Mornington in Melbourne, okay, who wrote in. And it was like, I'm having problems with my players. I don't know what to do when they just wander into a cave and shout out, hi, is anyone home? And then get attacked by all the monsters. it's the thing you wouldn't do in real life. Just like, I'm just gonna find out how this goes. I'm gonna be friendly because I'm not friendly in real life.
It's the things you would do if it was a video game. You'd quick save before it, do the action, and then reload it.
Yeah, except it works out so well. You're like, I guess I actually did that.
Yeah.
I guess that's what you're meant to do in this situation. just it does, Katara just seems to find the best in everyone.
Yeah.
Just that same as the line from episode 5 where she was just like, that was a good effort, but we're going to keep trying. And it's like, hi, let's be friends, new friend. Oh, they're just wonderful in this. And then I think that's it, that she has this, not a naivete, but this hope and this belief in people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think this is one of the very key elements of Katara as a character. And this episode is very much about that belief in people for her.
Yeah.
That we see all through it, that she, well, she kind of connects with Haru about it all, but she believes in Aang, she believes in Earthbenders, and has all the speeches and believes that people can do these things. And it's kind of rewarded at the end.
Mm.
Even though it does seem like the first time, I think that's it. The first time she tries it, the Earthbender's like, yeah, but no.
Yeah.
And then she tries it again, and this time it works. But she didn't give up after that first failure.
Yeah. Well, that whole mentality that she has is the kind of the whole reason the three of them are on this journey together. Because without Katara kind of at the start believing in Aang, they wouldn't have left with him.
Mm.
So
I think
kind
it's
of,
the strength of the show that it's sorry, I interrupted.
That's good.
That it's called Avatar The Last Airbender. And you get some shows that are, let's say, Xena. Or Hercules, The Legendary Journeys, because I'm apparently going on a 90s kick. So you get a show where the title character is the hero and then they have their entourage.
Yeah.
And this episode very clearly shows that this isn't the Aang show with his sidekicks. It's the three of them. Like, yeah. They're going on the journey. They are the adventuring party. Like, they've each got their strengths, they've got their weaknesses, and they all bring something to it. It's not Superman plus the Justice League.
Mm.
You can really tell, like, my references, can't you? Xena and Superman.
Hell yeah.
And I want to talk about a little bit of Katara's speech at the end, jumping forward, because she has the speech with the Earthbenders. Like, she's got them all together, and now she says, we can do this, we can overpower them, and we just need to believe in ourselves. And I can't, like, it was a big speech. It was a pretty good speech, too.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work. Now, in that situation, do you think that's, if that was a situation in your game,
mm-hmm.
do you think she's failed the check, or is it just an impossible task and that's the response you give to her? So you kind of open the door for... At this point, it's impossible, or did you just roll poorly?
I don't know. I think it. I guess it really depends on the story you're trying to tell, and I think in the context of this, it is an impossible thing rather than just a poor roll, because I think. It would tell its story in itself if the player rolls really well and they still don't cooperate.
Yeah, I think that's what it kind of comes off as. Because the speech, it's not like, you know, once more into the breach, dear friends, once more, or we'll fight them on the beaches. It's an uplifting speech, but it's not enough in the world. And it feels like that, the character did roll really well. But it's something that's just not going to happen until other conditions are filled.
Yeah.
And I just think that makes it an impossible task. And I'm wondering about impossible tasks in general. Like, do you tell players, hey, you just can't do this? Or do you explain why they can't do it? Or do you give them that hope of you can't do it yet?
I think it really depends. In a situation like this, I think it's more effective letting them roll. But like if they're like, hey, I'm going to lift that mountain. You're like, look, that will not work. Like, don't bother rolling. You can't lift a mountain. I don't know.
The Marvel role-playing game has... this is the Marvel Multiverse role-playing game, has a couple of suggestions because it says things like, hey, if the Hulk tries to lift the planet while he's standing on it, no amount of rolling is going to work. It's just that's not something that's possible. But, or I think there's another one. I think it might be in Blades in the Dark. They talk about if someone tries to knock over a tower with a sledgehammer, it's like, that's not going to work because it's an impossible task. And you tell the player that before rolling. It's like, okay, that's an impossible task. But knocking out a window, that's reasonable success.
Yeah.
So it changes the role. And I'm wondering in this situation that it's not that success failure that D&D does most of their skill checks around. It's something that to have any sort of shift of the dial, you need to have a success. So if let's say if Katara had failed that role, the Earthbenders just never listen to her again.
Yeah. Yeah, whereas exactly. I wouldn't just be like, well, I had it scripted that they won't listen, so just because I don't care what you rolled, that doesn't have any effect. Like, it would definitely be that, like, because of that speech prior and then your mix with the actions later, that's what allows them to rally.
Yeah. Yeah, because I feel like you can, like you were saying before, if they try to pick up a mountain, no, they're never going to be able to pick up a mountain.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go, okay, you've rolled natural 20, you don't pick up the mountain, but you realize to pick up this mountain, you would need a giant fucking crane.
Yeah.
Like, this, you figure out how to do it, even if you can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of where tasks like this, like, it still lets you tell the story that you're working with, like the one that works for what you've got prepared and what you got laid out, but still gives the players the agency to move it along.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yeah, it really struck me because it did feel like there were a couple of moments, like after her speech, like, oh my God, they're going to stand up. And then the fact that they didn't felt disappointing.
Yeah.
And then at the end, when they did, it's like, yeah, because she rolled well again. And she had those advantages of having the coal and having, well, the avatar and having her being a waterbender and all this other stuff going on at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. I think, and I think ultimately it does make for better storytelling there as well.
Yeah. Yeah, because you get to have your cake and eat it too.
Yeah.
You get to tell the story of, oh, you overcame the impossible odds, but also the character gets to be the one that overcame the impossible odds.
Yeah.
Not just you saying, yeah, they succeed. Maybe that's just me. yeah, and I liked that once they did start fighting, we did get to see a bit more of that whole earthbending technique that
I think this is the first time we get to see it, like, a lot, like, in a lot of different, like, because we've seen earthbending.
Yeah.
So far in the show.
Well, we saw Boomy's thing, but Boomy was very much like a one-on-one type of movements.
Yeah, this is the first time we've got a bunch of them together all doing their thing.
Which looks so cool when they're all doing it at once.
Yeah.
Whereas the Firebenders, in comparison, did not look as cool as, like, Zuko does or
no.
anyone else we've seen. They looked a little bit like, I'm going to stick out my foot and then it's a flamethrower. I'm like, oh, is that how? Like, okay. I don't remember Zuko doing that. But all right. And yeah, I think that introduction of just Haru just doing the very slow move, because is it one of the bending styles is based on Tai Chi, and I can't remember whether it's earthbending or
water bending's Tai Chi.
Waterbending's Tai Chi. What's earthbending?
Firebending is Northern Shaolin Kung Fu.
Yeah.
Earthbending is a type of martial arts from the southern provinces of China known as...
Live Googling, everyone.
Yep.
It's a podcast staple.
It says Hunga or Futga Kung Fu.
Oh, so it's another version of Kung Fu. That's cool.
Yeah. And then Korama. Okay, I don't know. Maybe I'm reading too much. I don't... Out of context. I think that's a person's
name. I'm sure
name.
It is out there. Like,
it is, yeah. Hunga Kung Fu. There you go. It is Yeah, okay, Hunger, cool.
Kung Fu.
Sorry about that.
Because they do have a similarity between Earth and Fire in sort of the movements.
Yeah, but Earth is much more like... They are these, like, sturdy movements.
Yeah.
Like, their stances, like, and, like, slower as well, a little bit.
Yeah. It's like a full arm strike.
Yeah.
That goes forward and then stops, rather than, like, the constant movement of the firebending.
Yeah.
But it's still... And it's, like, kind of a sweet... Well, we could go on about just the style of this, because it's ridiculously cool. But yeah, it's nice to see those in comparison as well, as another element. The fact that they've just got coal was a little bit... I wasn't so sure about that.
What do you mean? Just
hitting them with coal. It's like coal and fire. I feel like that's actually like a good combination.
Yeah,
like I don't think they should be able to take you out with fire, with like that.
Although
there's so much
I did love when what's his name and his dad get the big lump of coal, and like,
oh yeah, Haru and his dad,
they push it together and like solidify it. Yes. I don't know what else to say. Like it, like they
just like compress it.
Yeah, that yeah. Into like essentially a cannonball.
Isn't it coal that like if you compress it makes diamonds?
Possibly.
Is that one of the things I'm thinking of, or am I thinking that I'm sure there's some way that you make coal, like diamonds and coal are connected somehow. Write in, everyone. Tell me I'm wrong. I don't know this. My knowledge, I'm going back to like a random DuckTales episode where he gets like a coal area and he plants peanuts and all the elephants come through and suddenly he's got diamonds.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Everyone's like, oh my God, why are you taking this coal mine? It's like, yeah, because coal is so like such a horrible thing that no one wants in this world. Yeah,
apparently,
everyone hates
yes.
coal.
Yes, if you pressurize coal, apparently diamonds, yes. There you go.
There you go. Now, I wanted to mention, actually speaking of people like not caring about something that's very valuable, going back to when they're in the village and the Fire Nation are extorting like the old Haru's mother.
Yeah.
And comes in, it's like, oh, this is a nice place. It looks so flammable, though. Shame that something happened to it. And she's like, here's all the money I have. And he's like, you can keep the copper. I'm like, that's spot on D&D. That's every player character ever.
Yeah,
it's like, here's 700 gold and 60 copper. I'm like, nah, I'm not going to take that copper. You can keep that.
I did have, funnily enough, once a game I was running, and there was the chance that there was werewolves in the area. They weren't too sure yet, and then one of them they had, you know, their money on them, and quickly realized that they were disappointed that someone like paid them for something and paid them in gold, and they were disappointed that they weren't paid in silver.
Yeah.
Because and I think it's the first I've ever heard that. there was the when it was gold and not silver.
Mm-hmm. That's great. I think it's Curse of Strahd, where they point out that it's all electrum and gold pieces. There's no silver. Because, of course, there's werewolves everywhere. So, why would you have silver money? And it's just, so we can't melt it down. Great. So the only reason they keep silver around. But, yeah, it struck me as every player. But it's like, I'm not going to take that. But also just extorting random NPCs.
To be honest, like saying, like, this place looks flammable. Like, he walks in, puts the fire in his hand, like, instantly. Like, that's...
The fact that he walks in, like, he's suspicious because there's these kids who look really weird. Like, there's an airbender and two waterbenders wandering around this Earth Nation... village. And he walks in, so we've got all four elements together. And just, like, the way they look casual... Like, I don't know. I can't remember what Katara's doing. She's got, like, this really weird pose. But Aang's, like, leaning on a barrel and, like, Sokka's trying to eat something. It's like, of course he's now suspicious. We've gone, I might rob this place. It's that jump between they were suddenly the party and now suddenly he's the party.
Yeah. Oh, the Katara's stance. She's standing there like freeze framing, eating something instead of just eating it.
Yeah. Oh, the whole gang is just really fun in this episode because
yeah,
there's
they
that.
Are.
There's them talking about like what food they're gonna eat, and then the fake fight when they're trying to pose Katara as an earthbender.
Yeah.
Where she's making fun of Sokka's ears.
Yeah, and he's like telling her to stop and whispers, "No, please stop it." Like, it's actually hurting his feelings.
And she's like, "No, I will not." It's like, "Wait, no, stop. Nice to me." It's like, this is actually like physically painful to me. Oh, and just there, so you get out of my way. No, you get out of my way. And then the guards just go, "All right, well, let's see this play out. Let's see what happens." No, I will defeat you with the power of earthbending.
That scene, honestly, is so great.
It is so amazing.
That, like, it does such a good job of, like, showing their relationship as well. Like, them bouncing off each other. Also, the animation on her face, I don't know if you remember that when she's talking to him, it's, like, overly animated in that one scene for whatever reason. When she's talking about his ears.
Yeah, they're like real, like, I can't remember how it exactly looked. Like, they slow down their speech, but draw out the animation even a little bit. So it's like really, really rubbery.
Yeah.
I guess. I don't know. It's fantastic. It's just my favorite scene in the whole episode, honestly. And particularly because they've got this plan, and it's like, yeah, Aang can do it. And they look over and Aang's like playing with a butterfly. It's like, yep. Yeah, he'll be able to do it. Great. Which he then, of course, fucks up.
Yep. But to create like one of my favorite moments moment in the episode, which is, so the whole plan is there's a rock on a vent.
Yeah, there's a rock on a vent that Aang's going to pump air through a different vent and then lift the rock and make it look like Katara has lifted the rock with earthbending.
Which, first of all, is another, like, super, overly complicated, plan to get arrested instead of, like it's...
She could just... Well, they have to prove that she's an earthbender.
Yeah.
Like, they can't just punch a guard or something.
Yeah. But it's just, I don't know. Like, there could have been smaller rocks.
Haru got arrested because some old dude came up and said, "Hey, I saw him earthbending."
Yeah, exactly.
All they needed to do was say, "Hey, I saw that girl earthbending." They literally didn't need to show, like, pretend that she was earthbending. Oh, but just, I love that they've come up with a plan. And, yeah. It's great.
Yeah, and then
I was gonna keep explaining it that Aang does his bit and pushes the rock up after that. It's got Momo sitting there like in almost a lotus pose, like he's lifting the rock.
So funny, and even that shot, like you see the rock lifting up from the screen and like revealing behind it. Like Momo, and like they got like the wind, which is all blue, so it looks like this big, almost like, oh, it's such a funny shot of Momo like releasing, looks like all this energy lifting up this rock, where he's actually, I think, just licking, like cleaning himself.
He's licking his armpit, yeah. I love that these guards almost sell, like, they're almost taking the cake for better than the regular crew. Because they see that and go, "Hey, that lever's earthbending." They just watched the entire thing and seeing Katara say, "I will defeat you with the power of earthbending." See a rock lift and there's a lemur. They go, "Oh, wow, earthbending lemur." Huh.
I love that that's their first thought.
Then Sokka has to go, "No, Kalima, the girl, you idiots. I will hold her for you to arrive." They're like, oh, yeah. Why are you always disappointed that this lemur guard offend?
His world was a little bit brighter for a second.
Yeah. We love that it's a recurring gag because we go later on. They see some guards on the prison see Appa like going around out in the ocean, and they're like, "Sir, we saw a buffalo." "Yes, we saw a bison." "Well, which is it, a buffalo or a bison?" It's like, "Well, what's really the difference? Like, is there a difference between a buffalo and a bison?" Like that, there's this ongoing thing of guards in this area are just fucking stupid. Really want to discuss, like, well, what is the difference between those things?
It is a buffalo and a bison.
Oh, and then when the commander throws the guard who's talking about the buffalo off the thing, and it's like, "Now the captain to search out the intruders." Like, "Sir, that was the captain." "Well, find someone I didn't throw in the water."
It was honestly, it was so like they really, it was so funny the way they
Yeah.
handled the guards in this episode compared to the last few.
It's almost slapsticky
Yeah.
how they've done it, but it's also like you do see them as a threat.
Yeah.
Like it's not just like the fact that George Takei's character, I can't remember his name, unfortunately, he is a horrible, horrible person.
Yeah.
Like he's racist against the Earth Nation, he's just cruel to Katara, but he's also just a kind of a buffoon. So they somehow managed to go, okay, why? Well, that's part of it. The fact that he's a buffoon makes him all the more dangerous because he just doesn't care. He's like, yeah, you're nothing.
Yeah.
Even I, who is useless, am able to overpower you and dismiss you. It's such a good episode.
Yeah, it is. And that even like w
And
with him, it even like really at the very end when it doesn't end up going his way, kind of shows off that part of him as well. Like he very quickly begs for mercy. Because what is it? He's like, "I can't swim."
They're gonna dump him in the water.
Yeah, and he's like, "I can't swim." He's been working on this boat
And
and stuff. It's so.
that's a flaw in it because they go, "Hey, I can't swim," and the earthbender's like, "Well, I heard that cowards float." It's like, is that a saying that we should know?
No, he
Is
just
that like
killed
a
him.
witty one-liner? Yeah, I don't know. It wasn't great, honestly. That was the one letdown for it. But let's go back to the plan. I want to talk about
Yeah.
Sokka's plan, because this felt like again that element that this was all of the. This makes them a party. That it's not just one character doing everything. It's like Katara has the speeches. Sokka as players has the plans. Aang's player has some like more of the power.
Yeah.
But even at the table, they'd give like the game master's given them a puzzle. Like, okay, well, what are you going to do? And Sokka's player's like, all right, well, what if we try this? What if we try that? What if we try this? And the other's like, well, what if we use this element and bring it all together and use their different skills rather than just punch them in a face?
Yeah.
And then that plan then gets to be used again when they're freeing the earthbenders.
Yeah. Yeah,
It's like I.
they do a really good job of kind of utilizing each of their strengths together. And I th like and again like showing in terms of just this show as well, just the way they're advancing as a team and how they're starting to work like together really well and learn each other's strengths and weaknesses. Like it's just like really,
Yeah.
it's just because of these three kids that they release a whole prison worth of earthbenders.
And I think this is when we first have to start taking them seriously.
Yeah.
Because I'm thinking about the episode so far, it's like the boy in the iceberg, nothing. Even back in the boy in the iceberg, Sokka didn't really take Katara seriously. Like he was all, yeah, you can sort of water bend, but you get us into trouble more often than not. And Avatar Returns, like, yeah, Aang was able to get them out of things, but it was a lot of luck as well. Then Southern Air Temple, they didn't really have much of a combat in that one. Warriors of Kyoshi, it's like it was so much more the Kyoshi Warriors that were doing it.
Yeah.
And it's only really now that it's like, well, they're starting to work together. They're starting to respect each other and realize that each of them can bring something to the table and use other people's abilities rather than, okay, this is the one that Aang does, and this is the one that Sokka does.
Yeah.
It's good. I like it. I like it when you can have those three things. And you know what? It comes back to Star Trek. All right.
Sure, yep.
And here's a little bit of a little bit of knowledge for everyone. See, in Star Trek, the whole Bones, Spock, Kirk trio, they represent the id, the ego, and the superego. All right. Mm-hmm. So you following me so far?
Mm-hmm.
In that Spock is the superego because he's very much logical and this is how things should be. And then you have Bones, who is the id. And he's like, no, it's all about passion and you got to believe in people, Jim. And then you've got Kirk, who is the ego, and he's the balance between the two. So in this, I don't know which one's which. But that is a thing I learned and I just wanted to say it. I'm pretty certain that if people have been listening for a long time, you've probably heard me tell that story before about the whole those three, the Freudian archetypes, and particularly about Star Trek. But that's a thing that I think that three characters who then balance each other. I think that's what I was trying to get at with that. That it is these three people who do balance each other. It's the scissors, paper, rock.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Did I go on the right like tangent there? Good.
I think so.
It's the Pokemon rules.
And yes, talking about Star Trek was definitely random and not because...
No, it's George Takei!
Definitely not because George Takei's in it. Did you know, I'm just looking now, George Takei voiced Galactus in Superhero Squad?
Yes, I did.
I did not know that. That is amazing.
Did you know George Takei was in a Japanese internment camp when he was a child?
Oh, shit.
Yeah, he and his family were put in an internment camp during the Second World War.
Far out.
Because America. Because America, you people. But also, what else was he in? He's in
Skylanders Giants.
Sun. He's in a lot of stuff. He's amazing. He's done a bunch of books. He doesn't get along with William Shatner. There's a bunch of stuff.
He voiced Wong once.
It was Wong, was he?
Yeah, really? In Spider-Man the Animated Series. Wong is in one episode and he voiced him.
Oh, well, that kind of makes sense. Like, that's not a bad little role to get. I think he was in The Simpsons as well. He was...
He was, yes.
Oh, the sushi... Not the chef. He was the... Was he the... I'm trying to get remember the word. No, it was the one with the puffer fish. He wasn't the chef. He was the waiter.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. He was in Hitmonkey.
Was he?
Yeah.
Jeez, he plays himself a lot. I'm looking right now.
Because yeah, he's George. I'm George Takei, damn it.
He's in Community as himself.
That's right. He just kind of does stuff.
He's in Futurama as himself.
Yep, because they did all the Star Trek characters in that, or all the Star Trek actors have right. little heads.
He's actually in the live Beyond? Action Avatar, apparently.
Interesting.
Hmm.
Does he voice someone, or is he just in it?
Ko. Voice, apparently. Yes. So as a voice, I don't know who the hell Ko is.
This feels like when I discovered that Andre Bauer was in Fantastic Four 2.
Say that again.
Andre Bauer, as in Captain Hull.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. That's right.
He's in Fantastic yeah. Four 2.
He's the
literally,
guy.
Literally, like, the worst. Yeah, he's the military dude.
Yeah, when Mr. Fantastic's like, I have a hot wife, and I'm a nerd, or whatever his speech is to him.
I hate that. I hate it so much. It's taken from the Ultimate Fantastic Four, like literally taken from Ultimate Fantastic Four, and Mark Miller. Mark Miller licks goats. Like that's not a. That's not a. I'll go on to. You know what? Avatar.
Yes, that show.
I was just making a note to say George Takei tangent in the episode. Avatar. We're talking about the plant. Okay, well, let's talk about the Earthbending prison. I want to talk about this prison. Because this is the first, like, we saw waterbenders as a wiped out people, like in the waterbending in the South Pole. But this is the first time we've really seen them trying to stop, like, the Fire Nation getting rid of the bending.
Yeah.
Like, seeing it as this forbidden thing that gets you in prison. And I was thinking about this as a really, like, so many real world parallels. Like, people do this in role-playing games all the time. All the time they do this. And obviously it's something to talk about the groups first, because you don't want to have too much discrimination and prejudice and stuff like that. But it does... I'm going to go to my soapbox. Having that in your game is a good way to stand up to that idea.
Yeah.
Like, to have it as, okay, this is something in the real world, and this is a way you can smash it down and really go, that's never going to be a thing that happens.
Yeah.
So it's not often that we get to punch Nazis, but we do get to in role-playing games, and that's something I like to do.
Yeah.
So that's an opportunity. That's a reason to put these things in your game if people are okay with it. But something like this, where earthbending is forbidden, and I'm thinking, magic is usually the thing that's most regularly forbidden in fantasy novels and in role-playing games. It's like, it's easy to go, okay, well, if you're going to be a wizard, you have to be registered, and sorcerers are forbidden, and you got to go to watch it out. But I'm wondering if there's other classes or other subclasses or something, or some sort of element of it, like a D&D mechanic that you'd want to try and not ban, but have forbidden in the world.
Ooh.
Because I'm thinking now, what if you had rangers and fighters and all the martial classes are the ones that are banned?
Yeah. Yeah,
like, you could. Let's go full gun ban. You can't have a sword.
Yeah.
So suddenly, sorcerers are great. Everyone loves a sorcerer. You got magic everywhere. But you're carrying a knife around in public? That's a little weird, dude. So maybe we should have a chat with you down at the station.
Yeah, I think...
kind of attitude.
Yeah. I think also if you have someone like an artificer on your team, or artificer, however you want to pronounce it, having a place that's all like, no, we're all magic and we don't like innovation of like...
Yeah.
Like, I know artificer science. Does... Yeah, like, I know artificer mixes magic with things, but it's still more advanced technology, if you want to call it that, than a lot of other people would see.
Hmm.
So it could be like, if maybe it's...
Why would you have a bow, or why would you have crossbows when you can have magical spells?
Or a gun.
Yeah, or a gun. But that level of, well, if we've got magic to do everything, we don't need to develop technology beyond what magic can do itself.
No,
you can forge a sword pretty easily. It's just one piece of metal. But a crossbow is a moving thing.
Yeah.
And so you'd more likely have slings and like the like.
Yeah, and even then, like, it could be that, like, if it's a place where certain people can do magic, then maybe they do want to outlaw anything martial as well, because anyone can pick up a sword and swing it and maybe hurt someone, but not everyone can cast magic.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like magic, you can see when people are doing it.
Yeah.
Like, sword, you just stab someone and then throw it over a wall and run away.
Yeah.
I'm just realizing there is a class that's kind of forbidden anyway. It's called a rogue, because anyone who steals all the time is generally frowned upon by the local population.
No, a town where you get arrested if you don't instantly steal from someone, it's just like a town that seems empty, but in the corner of your eye, there's always someone sneaking up trying to steal from you.
Mm-hmm.
Even the guards, when they arrest you, they sneak up on you.
Yeah, you're like, you don't know they're there, and suddenly, oh, buddy, you walk past that Apple merchant, you didn't take anything. Don't worry, it's just a fire. We've already taken all your possessions. I was thinking another one that's pretty common is clerics.
Yes,
Like in the classic Dragonlance stuff, clerics just weren't a thing. Like you could play a cleric that was like the idea of clerics and god worshippers were just coming back. Which is interesting because they already kind of had paladins with the Knights of Salamnia. But that's another one that I think would be interesting. If you have like this crapsack world, like full on grimdark, and just go, you know what? You can be a paladin, but everyone's going to think you're shit. You can believe in your thing, but everyone's going to go, yeah, right. Everyone's going to be a cynic around you.
Yeah.
Like, I feel that'd be really interesting.
Yeah. And it's funny, and it really contrasts, of course, like kind of how they're perceived in your typical Dungeons and Dragons world as well.
Yeah, because they're the paragons of virtue.
Yeah.
And everyone believes in the paladins. Like, but everyone goes, yeah, but you're kind of like a walking arsenal, and who, no one's really that pure after all, are they? Like, you probably stole that. It's like how we treat, like, knights now, really. So, yeah, who'd you steal that horse off? I suppose another one, if there was a banning of bards, like you can't play music.
Just make it, what was it, Footloose?
Yeah, yeah. You just go to the town of Footloose. Oh, that'd be so much fun.
That'd be good. I'd love to. I'd actually love to do a Footloose session with my party, actually.
That's more fun than banning magic. Ban music. Like, just see how the players would react. Just, oh, okay, that's weird. And then you said one bard, like, that's...
it's just like it barely affects the party bar one of them.
Yeah. Oh. It's great world building opportunities as well, because do you fight back? Like, do you make that a part of your plot?
What, banning music, you're saying, or the other thing?
Banning music, but just banning something. Like, if you have a class that's banned, let's use clerics as a better example. Like, maybe it's because you didn't want healing magic to be common, and clerics are the ones that do that. So you come up with a world reason, like maybe there's no gods, or maybe there's only like a couple of gods, and it's very strictly overseen. But do you make that part of the plot that a character who wants to have that is having to build up the religion, build up the faith, or do you just have, that's it, can't even play it?
Look, for me, I don't really personally, like, unless it's like it really, really serves something great in the story, I don't really like banning classes or anything. Obviously, homebrew stuff's a different story, right? But your base ones, I don't...
Bullshit.
I don't really like doing it because I don't want to stop someone who's got a great idea. But I would definitely like let them know, like, hey, like in this world, this is what I've put in. So yeah, this is something you'd need to overcome, and we work that into your story a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's what I'd do as well. Like if I had something like that, I'd want to make it part of the plot. Like there's a reason why I'm doing it. I'm not just doing it because that's what the world is. It's like, no, I want to have you overcome that or realize the reason for that.
Yeah.
Like, I love that idea of maybe clerics are there because if the gods get too much belief, they come to Earth and start trashing the place.
Yeah.
And it's like people said, no, 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 we're not going to worship them because that's a bad thing. But of course, that's been forgotten.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, music, you can do so much with it.
We don't have music. Sorry.
No, it's just if you do it, then what Kevin's oh my god, who is it? I'm just blank.
Kevin Sorbo?
No, who's in Footloose?
Kevin Bacon.
Kevin Bacon. Then Kevin Bacon will have too much too many followers and then start to come down and wreak havoc. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, I love that. If you have too much music, Kevin Bacon comes to your town and traps it. Damn you, Kevin Bacon. He's come back. Quick, stop playing that upbeat music. I feel like we're getting a little too wacky.
Yeah, we are.
But that's something I like. I do have a couple of worlds that I've built where I've banned not so much classes, but ancestries.
Okay.
And part of that is because I want to have reasons why those don't exist. Like Dark Sun was a great example of those. You couldn't play an orc in that.
Okay.
And I don't think you could play, I'm trying to remember, I don't think you could play a dwarf or a gnome either. And spoilers for Dark Sun, it's because those races were completely wiped out.
Okay.
Like literally, it was the genocide to create the gods to wipe out these species. And it's like, you just can't do it. You can, if you really, really have to, if you have a reason, but you will be the only one in existence.
Right.
And I feel like that's sort of what the, not what the episode's doing, but it gives that easy characterization, easy drama, easy conflict for a player that we kind of see here with Haru and Katara as well, that it's like, well, if you're the only Earthbender, then the Fire Nation's going to come down on you.
Yeah.
So we've already got some conflict going on. We've already got a reason for you to go adventuring. So it's not something I'd ever ban. Like if I've got a world where paladins are incredibly rare, or even just outright there are none, I'm not going to say to a player, no, don't be a paladin. I'm going to go, yeah, you're the only paladin though.
Yeah.
And what does that mean for you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you can it can actually be a lot of fun if you have someone that seems to go against what you've established in your world, but you can play into that a lot.
I think you got to think about why are you banning them. If it's a mechanical thing, don't. Mechanics can change. Like you can work, find your way around the mechanics.
Yeah.
Everyone does in D&D. But for a story reason, I don't think there's any reason to ban something completely.
No.
There's just reasons to find a way to use it. I really love it if they didn't, because it means more work for me in storytelling. Like, all right, cool. If you're the only paladin, I better make it so that there's a reason why you're the only paladin.
Yeah.
But love it if there was just like, I'm the only rogue in the world. Everyone's such a good person that they never steal or kill.
It's like The Invention of Lying. Remember that movie?
Oh,
Yeah, it's like that thing where no one's lied, but no one's ever even had the thought to steal anything.
I have some problems with that film.
Yeah, no, it's not.
Like, I mean, it's very clever in places, and the idea that it ends up with is quite fun, but the world couldn't have got to that stage without lying. And also, there's the element where they just kind of say everything, which isn't necessarily lying.
Yeah, it's just like you don't have
Like,
to say everything on your mind.
yeah, it's like you just don't say it. If someone says, how are you? And say, I am bad. You don't say why you're bad. You
Yeah.
just say that you're bad. And it's like, yeah, it's interesting. Anyway, let's not get onto that tangent. I think, was there anything else you wanted to touch on for this episode?
Yeah, there is one thing.
Sure.
Zuko's player was clearly running so late that he arrived just as the session was ending.
I don't think he was even there,
No, he arrives
honestly.
right at the end when he finds Katara's necklace.
Necklace, yeah. No, I think that's a retcon from a later episode.
Oh, really? You think so? Like
Like,
he's
I think
yeah.
we see it as like at the end of the episode, but I think it's like the next session. It's like, oh, so what happened? And I think like the losing the necklace was kind of like a cost that had to be paid by the game master, or the game master's like, okay, you're able to succeed on this, but you've got to pay a cost, and it's losing this talisman that you were all about when you were flirting with Haru earlier. And Katara's player's like, yeah, okay, that makes sense. But that's when Zuko's players, they're like, oh no, but then I find it and I know to track you three with it now.
And then, like, as the DM, you're like, oh, but it was the cost. But oh, but you know what? It might push him to finally join with them. So,
Finally
yes,
catch
let's
up with them.
please. Okay, that sounds great. It's a great idea.
Yeah, I'm glad you were in that episode, buddy. Oh, wonderful. All right. Was that what we just wanted to mention? Zuko.
Yeah, just wanted to mention Zuko, end, like, just rocking when
he showed up.
Yeah.
Just the way he was in the episode. Wonderful. Well, let's wrap up. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. Tune in next week when we talk about the spirit world or the Winter Solstice Part 1. And you can find us on all where podcasts catch it. What the hell am I saying? You can find us wherever podcasts are found through your podcast catcher of choice. So subscribe and you will get us in your ear holes next week at this time. What else? We're brought to you by Masters of Alchemy, the premier game mastering service in Melbourne. The place that you can find us is mastersofalchemy.au, and also Fortress Emporium, where there's a whole bunch of stuff, and I believe there's probably going to be some of us or some stuff that there's to do with Masters of Alchemy at DreamHack.
Yes.
Which is going on the 27th and the 28th of April.
Exciting things.
Soon. It's going to be cool and we'll do stuff. We'll certainly do stuff. Look up DreamHack and look up Masters of Alchemy on those things. It'll be really cool. But you can also come down to Fortress Emporium in Melbourne on Sundays for Dungeons and Flagons, where we can teach you how to play D&D or just have a cool, fun game for a few hours. We are on Spotify and Podbean and a whole bunch of other places, but also on social media. You can find us on Instagram. You can find myself, which is at Talumin, T-A-L-U-M-I-N 83, or the podcast, which is at D-N-D-N-T-V-P-O-D. And Danny, your places as well.
Instagram at danny.calamari. That is it. Absolutely. At the moment, yes.
That's it at the moment? All right, cool. Nowhere else. No streams? No?
No streams.
All right, cool. We won't worry about that. Nothing, just Fortress and Instagram. But if you want to send an email, if you want to say other stuff that George Takei was in, or teach us more about the different martial arts forms that Avatar uses, you can send us an email to dndntvpod@gmail.com. That email address again is dndntvpod@gmail.com. But I guess with nothing left to say except... thank you for listening. Stay safe, be kind to yourselves, and may all your hits be crits.
Yep, yep.
This podcast is recorded on the traditional lands of the Wurundjeri people. Always was, always will be. We pay our respects to their elders past, present, and emerging.